once you get a purchase order, you want to fulfill it. And there's, you know, you don't have time to like put the pause button and say like, oh, we just want to, you know, redesign our packaging. We'll come back to you, you know, in a couple months.
Welcome to the Startup CPG podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Freitag. Tortillas are often a mere vessel to transport their tasty contents. But what if they could be the star of the meal, packed with fresh, bold flavors? Back in 2018, Henri Ravel and his wife, Belen, had a eureka moment. Inspired by Belen's Latin roots, Henri's passion for better tortilla options, and both of their entrepreneurial spirits, they created Eureka Tortilla, a snackable craft tortilla company. Listen in as Henri shares about honing Eureka's recipes, finding the right co-packer, launching in Nugget and with Hungry Root, printing challenges, and Henri's strategic approach to networking, to finding great advisors and connections. And since we recorded this episode, they've launched their online shop. Hi, Henri. Welcome to the show. So glad to have you here today. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me, Jesse.
Henri, I'd love it if you could just tell us a little bit about what is Eureka Tortilla, what do you make, and a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So Eureka Tortilla is a craft tortilla company that I started with my wife 3 years ago, and we've spent our time researching and developing these craft tortillas that where we include and bake into the dough fresh ingredients and flavors to make them tasty, snackable on their own. They're 5-inch street taco size, perfect for snacking. So it's come a long way to get on the shelf, but we're getting there. We're on a couple shelves at the moment.
Awesome. And can you tell us what all your current flavors are?
Yeah, we have two organic SKUs. First one is everything and more, which is everything bagel seasoning. And we include some chia and flaxseed in there for a nutritional boost. And we also have a plain delicious, which is another organic, just plain flour tortilla. And then we also have a pickled jalapeno and carrot and a blueberry and maple. And then the last one is cinnamon horchata.
Yeah.
So it's sweet and savory.
Yeah, you've got options. I think that the pickled jalapeno and carrot was my favorite to like put an egg in the morning, or mm-hmm. like put some like taco meat in, or and then the like cinnamon, like you can just, you know, put some butter on there and put that in the oven, and like it's a whole like meal dessert in itself. Like they're so versatile, and I love the size. Like it's the perfect size. You don't really need a tortilla, a big one, unless you have a specific purpose. So I think they're just super awesome. It's kind of like having a really flat bagel that totally. Is just totally versatile, but actually tastes good. It isn't just a vehicle to what you're putting on it. Like the tortilla itself actually tastes tasty.
yeah. And just the flavors that are currently out there, the quote unquote flavored tortillas, like the spinach and the sun-dried tomato that you see in the markets, just, you know, I thought could use a boost in flavor and update in flavors that are more appealing to our family and friends, and hopefully a lot of other people.
Yeah. Well, can you tell us more about, you just mentioned that you kind of saw a gap. So what does it look like to start a tortilla company? What did it look like for you? What were you doing before to then pivot into this? Kind of tell us a little bit about the last couple of years, especially the early days.
Yeah. So before my tortilla company, I was actually working in a startup here in San Francisco. It was a startup airline. So I was in the aviation industry, and I worked there for about 8 years, and that's a tough industry. I learned a lot, and we were growing quite a bit, and I just ended up getting burnt out. At the time, my wife and I had a baby, and I decided to kind of take a break, step away from it. And try to figure out, you know, what I wanted to do next, and kind of had a laundry list of different ideas kind of outside of the aviation industry. And I just knew that I wanted it to be something that was my own sort of creation, something new and exciting that I could say that, you know, we made, my wife and I put this together, and, you know, we're kind of our own boss. And so we had, like I said, a laundry list of different ideas. And one in particular just kind of hung around on our list for quite a while. And I just, it seemed like it was worth investigating a little bit more, which was, my initial thought was about flour tortillas, because I grew up in San Francisco and I'm a big fan of the Mission style burrito with, you know, the wrap that you can get in a lot of great taquerias in town here. And I love corn too, but flour, I was always just a flour fan, so to speak. And, but I was just kind of, you know, wondering, you know, looking at how there's not a whole lot of variety when it comes to tortillas, and not just flavor wise, but like the texture and so I kind of, and I think part of it too was when I was working downtown for the aviation company, I saw all these fusion trucks of like Indian burritos and sushi-ritos and all that. And I just kind of thought to myself, I think I had an idea of like wrapping up the fillings of a Mexican burrito in like Indian naan bread. And I actually even tried that once and it was so filling. It was not what I expected. So I kind of decided to see if I could come up with a flour tortilla that was kind of a hybrid between Indian naan bread and a flour tortilla, like a softer, fluffier flour tortilla, which is kind of crazy because I don't have a background in baking, but my wife and I had taken a class of this Indian flatbread, like intro class to making Indian flatbread. And the teacher was fantastic. I started talking to him and just saying, hey, you know, can you work with me on the side on this idea? And it was just, we had a lot of trials and different definitions of what soft and fluffy meant and trying to figure out what the right consistency was. But in that process, we started to mix in different fresh flavor combinations. And I said, whoa, that's kind of that what's different about these. It's not necessarily the fluffiness or the texture so much. Even though, you know, we do pride ourselves in our soft, chewy texture. It was really the flavor combinations where I was like, whoa, this doesn't exist. You can't get these anywhere else, because we started putting in these kind of first sort of traditional flavors, like the pickled jalapeno and carrot is a traditional garnish in Mexican cuisine called escabeche. And so that one was kind of a natural fit. And then we were like, well, what about like for breakfast, you know, everything bagel, we could put seasoning in there, and then sweeter varieties where you could just treat it like you would a bagel or toast. And we started to make the diameters of the tortillas a lot smaller and kind of more snackable. And it kind of just kind of was that eureka moment where we came into this idea of what the product looks like today. And I think I jumped around on your original question. That is how we got started. But I originally called the company the Fluffy Tortilla Company, which I get teased for by people who know that, and it's kind of funny to still get mail to my home office that says Mr. Ravel, the Fluffy Tortilla Company. It just kind of is funny. But then we kind of morphed into what I think is a lot more meaningful of a name, which was the sort of eureka moment of, you know, creating these tortillas that have exciting and delicious flavors.
I love that. The name change is awesome. But I mean, how great is it to keep getting mail that says Fluffy on it? That's just awesome.
Yeah.
So I think both names are great, but that's awesome. And then I think that your story is just so inspiring, because in the food world, we see a lot of people that, you know, maybe they've got their great grandmother's recipe that they're trying to share with the world, which is great. But it also can be a barrier to maybe, you know, or a perceived barrier to someone that's like, hey, I want to make a food product, but I don't necessarily know how to bake and don't know how to make food. And I love that you and your wife were like, we're going to take a class. We're going to try to figure this out, and working with people to make it happen. I think that that is so cool, and just goes to show you don't have to have this family history in baking or some complex backstory. You can see a need and you can learn it and you can go for it. And you guys really did that.
Yeah. I'm a total proponent of, you know, asking people questions and, you know, taking other people's advice. And I know what I know, but I also, you know, I think pulling information from other people, like an Indian flatbread specialist, and learning just from listening to what they have to say and their perspective on it has been totally helpful this entire process. with not just the Indian flatbread specialist, but all the people that I've worked with to date. Is couldn't have done it without the team that we have.
So how did you start selling to people? Were you hand rolling out tortillas yourself, putting them in some sort of packaging, and then, you know, selling them at a local store? Or what did it initially look like?
So we were hand rolling them, yes, to start with, but we didn't actually start selling them while we were hand rolling. I knew pretty quickly that in order to have any type of scale, we would need to make these on a production line. And because hand rolling would just be way too time consuming and laborious. So that was kind of the next hurdle. Was we went from hand rolling and handing out samples and getting feedback from friends and family, and to, okay, let's talk to a co-packer in the Bay Area. And I had talked to a handful of them just by cold calling them and reaching out and seeing what their level of interest was. And then from there, figuring out the processes that go into making these tortillas on a production line, which is kind of like starting from scratch in a way.
Yeah, basically you're kind of starting over when you're taking what may have worked when you're hand rolling in a smaller scale, and then you're going up to a co-packer. You're going to have to kind of rework everything. Can you tell us a little bit about finding the right co-packer fit? We recently on the podcast, we've talked co-manufacturing contracts. We've talked about managing inventory with your co-manufacturer. So it's definitely a hot topic in our community. And I'm curious if you could share about kind of navigating finding the right partner and what it looked like when it kind of clicked and you're like, oh, okay, like this is going to work.
Yeah. So I had called a couple different co-packers that I just did Google searches for in the Bay Area. I knew kind of in the back of my head, I was like, well, I better be, you know, they better be local, close to here, so that I could, you know, keep an eye on things and communicate with them easily and that sort of thing. But so I had called maybe four or five co-packers, and they were bread companies, they were tortilla companies, you know, co-packers for bread and tortilla products. And I had met with a few that kind of discouraged me a lot at the very beginning, because I'd show them pictures of the photos and they'd say like, oh, well, show me your documents, you know, your recipes of how, you know, how this process works, so that we can give that to our coworker, you know, our team here, and like, then we can give you a price and all that. And it was just like, whoa, you know, that I'm not prepared. I don't have that documentation written out yet. And the volumes that they were asking for were like truckloads. And I was just like, this is, I'm over my head. If I were to go with some of these earlier ones that I talked to, and their machinery too, and the size of their facility was like a big indicator. Cause like we'd walk in and it looked like this huge factory that, you know, everyone's in white coats and hair nets and things like that. And, it was just like, okay, we'll see if this is a fit, but it ultimately you kind of followed your gut instinct by just a lot of there were little red flags everywhere. But eventually I did get a call with the co-packer that I'm currently working with. They called me back and they were very friendly and interested in exploring these new products. And I could just tell from their operation that they were better suited to helping someone like me out versus, you know, their minimums were smaller. They were very open about giving me line time in between production runs so that I could test versus, you know, charging me a lot of, you know, costs for that, which is, you know, I think a lot of startups can get, you know, hammered with all these fees and costs. And so having these, picking the right partner is definitely, it's important in order to stay afloat.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe you officially launched in September 2021. So how did it work with timing, as far as you're trying to get in a run from the manufacturer, you're launching, and then where were you launching and what did that look like?
So yeah, we launched in Nugget Market. They're a specialty grocery store chain here in Northern California, and also in Hungry Root. So scheduling the production runs, you know, like I said earlier, like I've surrounded myself with a lot of people who know, who've done it before, which it I don't take that for granted, because otherwise, I follow kind of what they say a lot of times, and kind of like scheduling things out, what to think about, making sure that we're prepared, and then, you know, getting the distribution side of things too is a whole nother piece that we had to figure out sort of not last minute, but you know, it was like, okay, Nugget said yes, and so how are we going to get our tortillas there?
Yeah,
that's an important part. And so actually the co-packer suggested someone that currently goes to and from their production facility and to a lot of the Bay Area stores, and he recommended I reach out, and I ended up talking to him, and he was interested, and his team, and it worked out as a great distribution partner. So that was an important piece in getting things going, and then, you know, packaging, certification process, and yeah, a lot of moving parts.
Right. And I'm familiar with Nugget, but I'm not, until you and I had talked before this, you'd mentioned Hungry Root, and I've looked it up, but I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what Hungry Root is and how it works, and what, you know, what it means to kind of, you know, have your product there.
Oh yeah. Hungry Root is a grocery delivery subscription service, a subscription box service. And they're really fantastic because you can do two things on their website, which is curate your own box, or they create your box with recipes that their culinary team puts together. And their culinary team will highlight new products that they take onto their platform. And this was perfect for Eureka Tortilla, because being able to be in a channel where they have their customers that are looking at their products on, online, and to see recipes featuring your tortillas that highlight how to use them was really important for me. I mean, sometimes when people, or a lot of times I'll say, when people see the tortillas, they'll say, well, what am I supposed to do with a, you know, everything tortilla? And it's not always obvious that, hey, put some cream cheese and some salmon or, you know, lox on there, and treat it as you would a bagel. So the Hungry Root has been a great, great partner for us, because they've allowed us to put our best foot forward and show how people should be consuming these tortillas. And you know, it's been great to see the customers, what they come up with too. I mean, a lot of ideas I wouldn't even think about, and they will post about them online and come up with their own, you know, their own recipes. So that's been fun to see as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing what customers will come up with, and how you can then, I mean, you can choose not to maximize that, but if you do, you essentially have people just creating and generating recipes for you. I know at Live Bar, we had a demo rep who would take the leftover, you know, crumbles from her demo of the bars, and then she would send me pictures of recipes of, hey, look, I made this. And I'm like, what? Wow, this is amazing. Like, we got to share this with people. And then it kind of turned into a whole thing of creating recipes and sharing them with customers. And it sounds like then Hungry Root also is kind of creating these recipes and showing people how to use the product, which is huge. That's so cool.
Yeah, definitely.
How did you sell into Hungry Root and Nugget? Were you pitching lots of different retailers? Was it you going out? Were you working with, did you have an industry contact that was like, hey, you should focus on these? I'm curious how you kind of landed on those first couple, if you spread the net really wide and those are the ones that you caught.
You know, it was an industry contact that I had. A good friend of mine from high school actually is a contact and a friend of someone who works at Hungry Root, and he sort of said, hey, check these out. So I sent them samples, and it was a warm introduction that way, which I highly recommend. I've had the most success with warm introductions.
Yeah.
for both Hungry Root and Nugget. And I feel like with anyone starting out, just ask your network, you know, to think about who they know, if they have any connections on LinkedIn. I constantly scour who's connected to who on LinkedIn, and seeing if I could somehow get the right person's ear at retailers that I'd like to be in. And I feel like once you get that first shot and you get in the door here and there, that's kind of starts the momentum. So that's kind of how I've been handling it.
Yeah, which is great. And I think that when you mentioned earlier that just the ability to learn and jump in and try things, I think you really practice what you preach, because that within Startup CPG, like you've been one of our top clubhouse attendees, which is amazing. Like you're in there, you're networking and, you know, trying to figure things out and learn. And so I think it's so cool to see someone, you know, actually put it. So, you know, sometimes you'll just hear like, oh, like use your network, but you're actually out there doing it. And, yeah. You know, we've seen you doing it at Startup CPG, which is so cool. And I'm wondering if I think you also kind of found some, I don't know how formal, but some advisors along the way. How did you find, you know, kind of advisors? Was it this outreach that you're talking about of LinkedIn? And, you know, how did you kind of build up an advisory team?
Yeah, it was through, yeah, Startup CPG has been wonderful. It's been just such a great resource for my wife and I as a founding team, both for introductions and just general information, or I should say specific information about, you know, anything that you need to know about for starting a CPG brand. The advisors that I do have, I'm very fortunate, I think, to have found them. It seems like a little bit of luck and timing for the point in time that we were at the stage of the business. And for instance, an advisor that I've been working with for a few years now is Noah Alper, who started Noah's Bagels here in the Bay Area. And he's got just a tremendous grasp of business in general, but food in the food industry, retail, marketing. And I found him through a food networking group. Naturally Bay Area is another one that I've been a part of. And just I went through their whole database of, like, it was a database of all their members. And I, even though I didn't recognize who Noah Alper was, I looked up, like I Googled each and every like service or person's name that was in their database just to see who they were. And when I found that Noah Alper was the founder of Noah's Bagels, I was like, oh man, I have to reach out to this guy.
Yeah.
I didn't know the opportunity existed until I did that additional sort of research. And he was really the one that kind of helped me to think of these tortillas almost as bagels or toasts, like make them 5-inch, you know, the street taco size, so that you can just pop them into a toaster and put butter and cream cheese or, you know, any nut butter on there. And so, yeah, he's just one example. And then, you know, just more people that I've met along the way that have really been helpful. And so, yeah, I would say just network and be proactive about it. And you'll find the right person.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're putting yourself out there and searching and again, casting the net and trying to find the right connections, if you work at it long enough and hard enough, you're going to find those great connections.
Right. Right. And I mean, Startup CPG again has been wonderful. And then Retail Ready, Ali Ball's Retail Ready is another course that I took that has been a great resource. Even after I finished the course, you're still part of their community, and it really takes a village, so to speak, to make any CPG product work. So I'm constantly looking for help and support.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think that definitely that village exists. I mean, food is a competitive space, but I think we've talked about it on the show before of like, there's so much opportunity, and generally people in this industry are pretty willing to share and help each other, even sometimes if it is competitive. I think when we had Zahira from Herbivore Tea, she mentioned of the frenemies concept of, like, you know, that we can be competitors, but we can still be friends and help each other because there's so much space for everyone to win. And so I think that being willing to tap into that village is, it just puts you further ahead and gives you a lot more opportunities than trying to go at it by yourself and trying to kind of recreate the wheel on your own.
Definitely.
You mentioned the test at Nugget. And when you and I were chatting a little bit before this, it sounds like it's been going well and kind of moving to the next phase. Can you tell us a little bit about what it initially looked like working with Nugget, and then what's coming up next?
Yeah. So we launched in Nugget in September as well. And it was agreed that it was kind of a test phase to see, you know, SKU, find out a couple things like SKU ranking, where would the product live in the store, you know, where would these be merchandised, what pricing is working. And so over the last, since, you know, September, October, November, and December, we really tried different things and just looked at what was working and what wasn't. And then starting next week, we are going to be actually in the tortilla set in Nugget for the first time, which I think will be, that's really exciting for a number of reasons. I think that when people are shopping for tortillas, to be within the set itself is probably the right place to be in versus, you know, on a sales rack in a different part of the store. And if we, you know, I'm knocking on wood here, but, you know, hopefully if we have the right packaging and the right positioning on the shelf, that we'll get a lot more eyeballs and sales, it'll translate to sales. So we decided, finding a place in the tortilla set, and then also we are going to go with our top three SKUs as opposed to the five SKUs that we were going with before, and having sort of a refined promo pricing schedule. These are all things that we've sort of took their learnings from the sort of test phase that we've had, and now we're going to kind of go in for real now. So not to say that we weren't in there for real before, but this is, you know, now probably hopefully the home that we're going to live in for Nugget and beyond. So it's an important part time coming up, and we're anxious for it. So
yeah, that's so exciting. And I think that testing phase can be super valuable to figure out, like you said, some of that promo pricing, where you're going to live in the store, narrowing it down to your top SKUs can be helpful so that you're not managing, you know, as many during a larger launch or a longer term. So that makes a lot of sense. I'm super excited to see how that goes.
Thank you. Yeah, me too.
I'm wondering, you mentioned a little bit about packaging. I think when you had mentioned to me at some point there was like some stickers involved, and there was trying to like print on the actual packaging. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the packaging challenges, how you've navigated, and the current packaging you're using today?
Sure. So we started off with printing labels and sticking our labels on the bag just by hand. And that kind of, that was okay for, you know, the phase that we were in at the time, but we had gotten some larger orders, and the co-packer was like, okay, we can't put that many labels on bags. It's just going to take, it's too much labor to continuously do this. And so we were sort of scrambling, for what we could do to kind of, you know, once you get a purchase order, you want to fulfill it, and there's, you know, you don't have time to like put the pause button and say like, oh, we just want to, you know, redesign our packaging. We'll come back to you, you know, in a couple months. So one of the guys that I work with was like, well, let's just print the design of the label onto the bag, and then, you know, that should be sufficient for a period of time. And then, so that sounded like a very great solution. We ended up doing that, but the registration of the print on the bags just wasn't the quality of like a printed label. So we wanted to, so now like it's okay, like it's not bad, and it actually looks like it looks good for one of our SKUs, the Everything and More, but for some reason the reason for that is because it's a black logo or a black color scheme, but for the other ones that have different colors on them, the registration just doesn't look as fresh and as clean as I had hoped. So we had to, we're in the middle of a packaging redesign, so that the messaging pops more. And now that we've committed to printing on a bag versus printing labels, we're now having to think of, okay, what's the front of the bag going to look like? What's the back of the bag going to look like? Because each little detail is important real estate for marketing and information for customers. And so we've just been, you know, working through that process. I wish it was all ready and we were ready to go for this, like this phase with Nugget coming up, but that's just one of those things that we have to manage on the side, along with when we're in Nugget and, you know, the current packaging that we have, make it look good and good so that it's, you know, it looks appealing on the shelf. So those are some of the, what we're currently going through with our packaging.
Yeah. Your heart just had to have sank when you got the packaging back after the run and you saw that it wasn't what you had hoped for. How do you deal with those, you know, these kind of hiccups come up in CPG and can get to a person? How do you handle those kind of challenges as they pop up and kind of keep going? Like you said, you're like, this isn't the way I wanted it to be, you know, ready for this launch, but it is what it is. How do you deal with those kind of things?
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it was my fault because I should have said, hey, to the bag printing company, I should have like done some like quality control for them. Like I should have said, I want to see the quality of them before they come out, but I was in a rush. So I just said, yeah, you know, print these out. They said they could do it. And then after they printed them out, it was just like, oh, these are just not as, you know, clean and registration wise as I had hoped. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you just kind of have to roll with the punches and learn from your mistakes, and hopefully the mistake isn't that expensive and you have the time to kind of prepare for the next kind of decision on the horizon, which would be like printed bags that are fully printed on the front and the back. And that's, yeah, I hope there's not too many more mistakes like that, but I'm sure there will be.
part of the journey, but it sounds like you're learning from them and really intentionally then moving on to the next step after something happens so that you're not necessarily repeating the same things.
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line, I think, is I know that the packaging could be like, you know, looking a lot better in the sense of like just overall voice and imagery of, you know, what these tortillas are and speaking to the best, you know, attributes of the tortillas and what makes them truly unique so that people, when they pass by them on the retail shelves, they can get it right away. And they're like, oh, wow, this is totally a different type of tortilla than what we've seen on the shelf before. So I just know that, it's a process and we just need to kind of work through it. So I'm hoping the designers that I've been working with, they've been fantastic, and I'm sure they'll come up with something good.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. The main thing is to keep putting something out there. And so I think it's great that, you know, maybe they're not exactly what you envisioned, but you kept going, and that doesn't mean you can't still sell it and then continue to improve over time versus not putting anything out there at all. So I think it's great that you've just continued to go on and that you're going to continue to do that, to just keep trying and see what works and then continue to improve over time, not having to have it perfect from the beginning.
Right. Yep, that's true. Because it'll never be perfect. If the more you try to get it to be perfect, you just end up wasting time. So mm-hmm. It's better to get it out there and get feedback on it and go from there.
And so it sounds like you're working with some designers on this process. I was going to ask how you've navigated kind of the packaging, if you've had some outside help to manage the compliance pieces and the design pieces. So it sounds like you've been working with someone.
Yeah, actually, Andy from Buttermilk Creative is helping me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and he's been really great, very talented designer, and takes his time to understand, you know, the product and how to present it in its best light. And so he's been great. And before, you know, the other designs that we've had, I actually really liked, and I still like, and that was done from another sort of creative person who has helped me for over the years, the few years that we've worked together. And it was great. You know, the designs that we've had and the current design are, I think, really, they're really good, but I think it just can be better. And it wasn't really known earlier on, you know, what the voice was going to be, what the messaging, the taglines and all this, that really is the first few things that a customer sees. If I knew that at the beginning, I would have done the design differently, but things change as they go along. And you just kind of, like I said, got to roll with the punches.
Yeah. And for the listeners that don't know, Andy is at Buttermilk Creative, is actually part of the Startup CPG community. He's the one behind the the emails you get if you're on our awesome email list. And he's sponsored some of the resources in our group. So definitely just an awesome resource in our community. And he's got a blog about packaging, and he does a podcast with another member of our community that we've had on the podcast, Kirk at Mind the Font. So they've got a podcast about all things CPG packaging. So lots of resources there. So that's so cool. You're getting to work with an expert like Andy. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. That's how I found him. Was through when it might have been a Clubhouse panel or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I see he's always involved in the startup CPG world.
Yeah. And how, you know, you mentioned that you founded this with your wife. You've got a young daughter, I'm guessing around a year old at this point. Like, what does it, you know, look like kind of as a family working on this business? What parts does your wife work on? And then, you know, how do you manage having a really young child and also trying to grow this brand?
Yeah. Well, my daughter is actually 4.
Oh,
now.
Okay.
So yeah, she was 1 when we kind of got started.
Okay, there we go.
And so she's a young lady now, and she is very opinionated about, you know, daddy's tortillas. So
I love it.
Her favorite used to be blueberry and maple, and now it's cinnamon horchata. So it changes, it seems, all the time. But anyways, yeah, to get back to your question, my wife, she has a full-time job, which has allowed, you know, me to explore and try this tortilla venture out. And it's been, I think, a really, really wonderful experience working on this. You know, we're all working from home these days, but she worked from home even before the pandemic. And to kind of be able to have ideas and run them by her and get feedback from her, because she has a background in finance I think it's just been a great, we make a great team. It's a good dynamic to be able to have a sounding board that you actually live with and you know, give a good perspective on, you know, what our goal ultimately is to have a successful business that we can sort of see grow and you know, learn from it. Have my daughter learn along the way. I'd love to, you know, get her involved when Eureka Tortilla is, you know, 10 years older. Maybe that'll be her first job. I don't know. So yeah, no, it's very special. It's a good dynamic that we have.
That's really cool. I really like that. And I'm also wondering what's coming up next for Eureka over the next few months, or, you know, the rest of 2022, what should we be on the lookout for, other new things happening? We've covered a couple of them, but, you know, I just want to talk through some of those. And because also, you know, are people going to be able to buy them on your website? Because after this episode, they're probably hungry for some tortillas.
Yeah, we are getting the website up and running for e-commerce, and hope to do that, you know, in the coming month, I'd say. And then also getting into some other stores, I think will help, local to the San Francisco Bay Area. I think there's a lot of specialty natural food stores that these tortillas would do well in and would be appreciated in. And so I think, you know, getting into some independents and see what other opportunities are on the horizon for retail are what's coming next. We do have a couple new SKUs coming, but I won't mention what those are just yet. But yeah, more recipes, more SKUs, and hopefully more sales. So
yeah. And can people, do you have like an email list that people can sign up for? Can they follow you on Instagram? What's the best way to kind of keep up?
Yeah, we're at Eureka Tortillas on Instagram and Facebook. And we do have a email sign up if you go to our website, which is www.eurekatortilla.com.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah, I'm definitely going to be, I'm excited to stay tuned to see how this continues to unfold, and definitely your startup CPG community is here cheering you on. And then I'm excited for some new flavor drops, because that sounds delicious.
Great. Yeah, we'll definitely keep you posted.
Is there anything else that you wanted to share with the audience before we before we sign off? Anything that we missed that you were like, oh, shoot, I wanted to get that message out to the world?
No, I think just keep an eye out for us in Nugget and sign up for Hungry Root if you haven't. Again, it's a great service, and we're coming to a store near you hopefully soon.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Henri. This has been so fun to get to hear more of your story and just that you've been willing to share about some of the different challenges and the different ways that also that you've maximized networking and, you know, finding people to come alongside you on this journey. So this has been super valuable, and I really appreciate you spending some time with me.
Thank you, Jesse. No, I really appreciate this too, and looking forward to the next Startup CPG event that you're a part of, and we'll see you there.
Yeah, excited to meet some people in person.
I know. That'd be great.
Since we recorded this episode, Eureka Tortilla has launched their online shop. So if you go to eurekatortilla.com, you can try out the flavors for yourself. Thanks for joining us. This Startup CPG podcast is executive produced by me, Jesse Freitag. Theme music is by the Super Fantastics. We'd love to have you join our community of founders and experts. Get the invite at startupcpg.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening right now. It's the easiest way to help us grow our community. See you next time.